Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. It's the People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beat.
Don't get no more realer. Welcome to RSG, Renegade Radio, Real Sports Guys, RealSportsGuys.com, where real guys talk real sports. I'm your host, Marcus the Game Changer, and one third of the illustrious Three Man Booth, and we'd like to welcome you in to the show tonight. Now, we're going to be with you for the next 2 hours. We have lots of great sports talk to get into. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. But before we get into the proceedings this evening, let me introduce my partners in crime, my comrades in arms. To my left, I got my man, 100 grand, Phil T, sports PhD. What's happening, Captain?
Present.
Keep it real smooth, real simple, real concise. Now, usually I throw it to my man D. Wills, but he's got the business to take care of. He's not with us this evening. So sitting in, we have CEO of our sponsor, Resistance Digital. We have the CEO, Larry Randall.
L.R. Bell Dog.
What's cooking?
Glad to be here, boys. I'm looking forward to some good talk and putting a few people on blast tonight.
Larry got a couple of bullets in his waist. He's just waiting to let out.
Yeah, he sharpened his swords for this appearance.
Yeah,
and that's what we do. When you come on, when you're in the chop shop with the renegades, you got to make sure, you know, your swords are sharp. You know, might have to bring a couple ninja stars to Chuck. You know, you got to keep it real razor, real, bring that razor's edge. All right?
Yes, sir.
So, allow me to get into the portion of the show we call the intro to let them know, where we give you a quick rundown of everything we got in store for you all tonight. Now, time is a fluid concept to the renegades, because we are renegades. And so we do what we want. But we make sure we keep it entertaining. So we may not hit all these topics. We're going to try to get through everything. First thing we're going to get to, funky editorial. We're going to talk about the enigma that is Cam Newton and how he's being treated in the media. Is he helping his own case? Is the treatment fair? Many of the questions we're going to address in the funky editorial. That's going to be coming up shortly. So make sure if you want to hear that, you stay with us right now. Then we're going to get into some NFL talk, recap NFL Week 10, highlight some games, talk about the many, many quarterbacks who have been concussed, injured over the past week. The season is in full effect, and it's starting to take a toll on people. Those injury lists are starting to get longer and longer, and that's going to have an impact as we get closer to the playoffs and as playoff races begin to develop and crystallize, and we get a better picture of who's real and who's fake. We're also going to talk about the first 2 weeks of the NBA season. Wow, just so much going on. There's a ton to get into. I have some agendas that I need to address that were raised in our NBA preview show with the infamous Justin Page, our resident NBA expert. He and I got into some back and forth, and right now I got the edge a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and gloat for a moment, because one thing you know about the Renegades, we all love to be right.
Right. Anybody watching live right now or listening live, they know the title of the show. Game changer in quotes. The Clippers are better than the Lakers, period.
And for those that aren't aware, me and Justin got a bet, all right? Some hair or facial hair is getting shaved off, depending upon how it shakes out, which team is better, the Los Angeles Lakers or the Los Angeles Clippers. And again, as the
so why were you even asking that question?
I got the Clippers. We'll get into that in a little bit. Then we're going to hit through with the five on the black hand side. We're going to talk to NCAA hoops. The NCAA hoop season is kicking off. Some banger games is on tonight. Michigan State just knocked off the Kansas Jayhawks. Duke and UK are about to, Kentucky are about to tip off as we speak. So if you want to talk college hoops, make sure you check in with us tonight. All right, then we're going to get into some NCAA football. We're going to talk about the BCS picture as it continues to develop before our eyes. Some major upset over this weekend, particularly Alabama getting beat on their home field by Texas A&M. Shout out to Johnny Football for holding it down. We're going to talk about that. Then we're going to get into our onions for this week, hit you off with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, and then get into the shutdown. So, again, got a lot in store for you, a lot of good stuff, got a lot of goodies jam-packed into this one. So sit back, relax, let the Renegades take you for a funky ride. All right?
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Now, in this edition of the Funky Editorial, we're going to talk about the one, Cam Newton. All right? Cam Newton. Now, Cam, amazing first year in the NFL, set many records, rookie records for passing, rewrote the rookie passing record book his first year for the Carolina Panthers. Came into this season, a lot of high hopes, lots of high expectations, talked of a Super Bowl appearance by he and his teammates. And with 10 weeks in, and a lot of mixed results with Cam. Good weeks, more bad weeks than good weeks. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, over the last couple of weeks, he's taken a big hit in the media. The media is going after him real hard. You know, he's had some press conferences that have not helped his cause, where he seems to be sulking, seems to just not handle losing very well. Now, again, this is a guy who hasn't lost much in his life. Won a junior college national championship his 1 year in junior college, came to Auburn, won a national championship his 1 year at Auburn. So he's not accustomed to losing, but it also seems like he doesn't handle it well. So I'm going to bring in my man LR, and I'm going to let him get first crack at it because, again, he's got a whole holster. He's got like the Batman utility belt of
right.
weapons, of weaponry
right.
that he's ready to
That's
break
right.
out. So I want to let him cast the first stone, so to speak. LR, Cam Newton. When you see Cam Newton, what do you see?
When I see Cam Newton, I see an untrained quarterback. It's really indicative of what's wrong with college football right now. His game on the field can evolve. He could be an excellent quarterback, but I don't know if he has the attitude to do it. When you see him on the podium every time, he's sitting there pouting and sulking and crying. I don't know what we're going to do, you know, but something got to change. I mean, that's not the way that the top-tier quarterbacks function in the NFL. I'm not sure who to blame. Do I blame, you know, the college football system for, you know, putting the best player at quarterback, even though it might not suit them well in the NFL? Or do I blame him as a person for not trying to evolve as a quarterback? It's still out. I mean, the jury's still out on Cam. I mean, you set all these records. You're a rookie. Look, most of the time, rookies aren't playing in the NFL, so that's why you got all the records. It ain't because, like, you're some guy who's a quarterback. I mean, I hate to be cynical like that, but it's the truth. How many rookie quarterbacks actually get to play their first year? I mean, lately, yeah, it's happening because everybody saw Cam and everybody's like, oh, yeah, let's play a rookie. But before that, you know, no one plays their rookies that much. So, you know, I just want the young man to grow up. I mean, be an NFL quarterback. Learn your traits that are going to get you to the next level and quit the pouting and the sulking and whatever else. You want to act like Superman? Okay, but you're playing like Clark Kent right now. Step your game up.
Ouch.
Okay. Now Larry set the scene real nice, and we wanted to give him the first swipe. PhD, Cam Newton, what's your take on this whole situation? Again, the sulking, the poor play, the press conferences, all of the things that are going on, the media going in at him. What is your perspective?
Well, he's brought a lot of this onto himself. First of all, with his play. He's upside down in his touchdown to interception ratio, 8 TDs to 10 interceptions. I think the biggest thing that's hurting his team, in addition to the turnovers, are the untimely sacks that he's taking. You know, through 9 games this season, he's averaging just under 3 sacks a game. And if you take out 2 games, which he didn't have any sacks, he's about at 6 a game. So in the games that they're really doing bad, he's taking way too many sacks. So when you add that in, because there is a lot of critique about his game in terms of how poorly he's playing, then when you add in some of the stuff that Larry talked about, the sulking, the things that we just don't expect from leaders, especially leaders who are quarterbacks. We expect for you to stand tall, take the criticism, take the blame, own it, and not look to defer the blame to anybody. And he hasn't done that. So in that regard, he's brought a lot of this onto himself. In another regard, the media has taken this opportunity in which he's opened the door to just do some construction, blast open some walls, and not just open up the door, but put in a French door, okay? So, you know, I mean, they are straight piling on. You know, I was watching a game, which I think sparked this conversation. You know, we weren't off the air last week because of the election. We weren't on the air last week because of the election, so it's been a few weeks since we've been on the airways. But that week, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Cam Newton's getting criticized for not celebrating with his teammates long enough, for not running down to the end zone to celebrate. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks choose not to do that. You have, on one extreme, you got Brett Favre. Brett Favre is running down to the end zone while the ball is in the air. I mean, he's at one extreme. And then you have another extreme of guys who just don't engage much with their teammates. And then you have everybody else. And Cam, in general, is everybody else. But a lot of the commentators are picking and choosing to support their criticism of him, and there's a huge microscope on him. And one of my frustrations with this microscope is that if we're going to do it to Cam, we need to be consistent and do it to other players who are struggling. If you look in that second-year class of quarterbacks, the majority of them are very inconsistent. They're going up and down. You look at the kid in Minnesota, Ponder. First couple of games, he looked great, but he's been very inconsistent. Dalton's had some games this year where he looks like he's about to make that turn, and he's had a couple of other games where he looks like a second-year quarterback. But at the same time, we don't critique them the same way. Why? Because Cam showed so much potential last year, and also Cam brought a lot of baggage into the NFL, but for some reason, we're not able to forgive that and pawn that off to he was a kid. So I think when you mix all that into the gumbo, as D. Wills would say, that's what you got going on with Cam Newton.
Well put. Because, see, for me, Cam, you know, I was lukewarm to Cam coming out. And part of what we're seeing is part of the reason I think that I was lukewarm on Cam. I had questions about his ability to lead a squad. You know, I referred to him as the son of a crooked preacher. So I had questions about that, and how much you can really follow the son of a crooked preacher. But his first year, he convinced me that he can play this game. Regardless of the questions I had, he convinced me that he could play. And what I'm seeing this year is, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, but this is one of the pieces that turned me off to Mike Vick when he was in Atlanta. You know, Mike Vick kind of had rabbit ears early in his career, and he would listen to his critics a lot, and he had a lot of critics. But it was his response and the way he responded to the critics. We all know quarterbacks have critics. Quarterbacks are going to get criticized. Mike Vick, he had like a 220-yard, three-touchdown, no pick, just an average, a good game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he gets up to the podium after the game talking about, I don't want to hear nobody talking about I can't throw from the pocket. I don't want to hear nobody talking about Mike Vick can't throw from the pocket. This, that, and the other. And it's like, dog, you had one good game. Put it all in perspective. And I think for some of these cats, they grow up, and for me, it's more an environmental thing, and it's more between the ears than it is about Cam Newton's ability, as far as the sulking and his part that he has to play in this whole fiasco. Is that you got a guy, again, who has been coddled, who has been told he's the greatest, and now he's not living up to that in his own mind. He's not living up to that, and now you got the media talking about how he's not living up to that. And he can't handle that. You know, a lot of these guys, again, they don't know how to be an underdog. They know how to play from underdog, because in every situation on the athletic playing field that they've ever been in, they've been the favorite. And when your team is losing and you're not used to losing, you're not going to be the guy to rally him, because you don't even know how that feels, where that comes from. And it's the difference between being a winner and just being somebody that's never lost. You know, a winner has been in a situation where they've taken some L's before, and they don't like it. And because they don't like it, they switch it up. They learn something new. They improve. They evolve. They become better. A guy who's just been successful relies on what has made him successful when he loses. And so he just says, well, I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing, because that's why people love me. I'm me.
I want winners.
It's the same reason that Mike Vick was a hard-headed when he was in Atlanta, and he had trouble developing. He said it himself in retrospect that he didn't get into his playbook like he should have. He didn't study like he should have because he relied on what got him to that point and what made him successful. And I think that's the difference between being a winner. A winner is going to say, well, this ain't working. This is what got me here, but I need to get to this next step. And so for guys who get that success right away, who get that, especially guys who get that kind of cult following, a lot of that mainstream support right off the bat, it makes it even harder for them to block all of that out. So that's Cam's part, in my opinion. Again, this is just my humble opinion. I don't claim to be right on this at all. Because I don't know.
No, you're right. You're right.
And then, look, the media piece. Go ahead, Larry.
If you want to do the Under Armour commercials and with the DJs and all the foofy lights and whatever else, then you need to own up when you ain't playing well. Okay? That's just the truth. So if you're going to take the good with the media, you got to take the bad. You in the bad. So now we seeing how you act when you take the bad. I wouldn't want you on my team. I want winners. So that's
the other question. That's the other question we got to ask. Do we still believe in the trajectory? At the beginning of the season, I think if you would have said, you know, if you would have put all the second and first year quarterbacks into a draft, and you know, decided who you were going to take, and each of us had a pick. I think whoever had the first pick, other than you, Larry, you might not have, because I know you claim the boy was Eric Crouch coming out. So I know how you feel about I know how you feel about Cam. So you might not have, but I think if you pose 100 people, the majority of those 100 people were going to take Cam Newton with their first pick if they had had that opportunity. Now, I think a lot of people would at the very beginning of the season, because Cam was proven. Andrew Luck coming in was a lot of projected. He was projected to be great. But we had saw Cam set the league on fire, had a great rookie year. You made a good point. And you know, I don't think it's that not a lot of rookies play. Not a lot of rookies play well. So it's not hard to be rookie quarterback stats usually are terrible. You know what I mean? Like, if they break even on interceptions to touchdowns, we like, oh God, this kid's got talent. You know? So, with that said, I think Cam was more of a proven commodity. So people, I think the majority of people would have said, well, I would take Cam Newton, and Andrew Luck probably would have been that second pick with RG3. And then, you know, somewhere in there you get Andy Dalton, you know, those cats. A Tannehill or somebody like that. Where are we at today? And I'm gonna start with PhD. So I'm gonna start with my brother PhD. So PhD, if you had number one pick today between all of the rookie and second year quarterbacks, who would you take?
Well, I still think Cam is in the discussion. And to me, it would come down.
No, we're not talking about in the discussion. Who are you taking? Give me a name.
Who you with?
Proper noun. I want a proper noun.
I mean, am I on a time limit or, you know, I.
Nah, I just want a proper noun.
You're on the clock.
Right. I was going to get that. I've never been known not to just pick somebody. You know, I mean, you can count the times I've punted on this show.
Typically,
it's during the intro when I punt. That's about it. So I think Cam is certainly in the discussion. And to me, it comes down to three guys. RG3, Luck, or Cam, to me. And I like a lot of the other quarterbacks. You know, the other five or six guys. But I think it really comes down, like, I think those three are in the top tier right now. And for me, I'm still going Cam. I'm still going Cam, and I'm going 1A Cam, 1B Luck, and 1C RG3. And, you know, to me, I'm still torn between RG3 and Luck. Because for me, And I'm thinking of the Geico commercial. There's proof that two in the hand is better than two in the bush. So I'm going with Cam because I've seen him play at his best. And I think if Cam was a rookie this year and played the way he did last year as a rookie, we'd be talking about Cam more than Luck or RG3. We'd be rationalizing why Cam isn't winning games and Luck is. Why? Because Luck had a better defense. He had a better defense that, you know, just this past, you know, the year before he came, they were projected to do X, Y, and Z before Peyton Manning got hurt. And so for me, I think it's too early to really evaluate the first-year guys because, A, they haven't finished their first year, and, B, they haven't come back for a second year, okay, where now their sophomore slump, teams have additional tape on them, and they've had a full year and a full offseason to prepare for these guys. So for me, in this apples-to-oranges comparison, I'm still taking the two in the hand in Cam Newton over the two in the bush in terms of the projection of Luck and RG3. I think RG3 and Luck are doing a heck of a job this year, an excellent job. Okay, but I'm still taking Cam because I think that all these guys are going to have some type of sophomore slump or freshman slump, and we're only halfway through the season.
Okay. LR?
Well, to be honest, I don't know if Cam would be in my top five.
Now, wait a minute. Okay, go ahead. I'm going to let you finish.
The problem with Cam is that this league is based on being able to throw the football. Cam can't do that.
Okay?
Cam is what I would call an average thrower. In the league, average doesn't get you a starting job in most places. You're the elite. So if I were to pick out of the sophomores and freshmen, Luck would be my first pick. Dalton would probably be second. And I can roll with a Ponder at three. Because at least those dudes show enough moxie to be able to get their nose in the playbook, learn how to read defenses, and throw the football on time and where it needs to be. I haven't seen Cam do that in this year or last year. So I'm still debating on whether or not he's actually an NFL quarterback. Y'all might think I'm crazy, but I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it yet. And if you can't throw in this league, then you're not a quarterback. I'm sorry, you're just not. So that's why I've been hating on Cam since day one. Even RG3, he's a very good athlete. But I think Luck is just as good an athlete as those dudes are. But Luck can actually throw, and he knows how to read defenses. And, he has those intangibles. So Cam, he lights up the fantasy board, but he's not in my top five, I don't think.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Yes. That's how much I despise Cam's game. I think that too.
Yeah, now, PAZ, you got Cam at one. Larry doesn't even have him in his top five. How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say it's my list, okay?
It's my house.
You know, it's my list, and Larry can have his. But I would counter, you know, and LR brought up some really good points. And I, too, agree that, let's not get carried away that Andrew Luck is a better athlete than RG3, but I do agree that Andrew Luck is an excellent athlete. In terms of at the quarterback position, I will give you that. I just think if you throw for 4,500 yards or whatever he threw for last year, you have to be a good passer. Okay, now, can he get better? Absolutely. Is he rough around the edges? Yes. But I think that he has all the raw tools and has demonstrated that he can pass the football. Now, and I was one that really had a hard time with Cam coming out of college. You know, Devon was the one that really won me over in terms of his mechanics, because Devon kept saying, listen, Cam Newton's got a lot better mechanics, especially when he kept getting compared to Tebow. And that certainly panned out during that first year. But I would say that Cam, again, they had the first pick for a reason. Carolina did. And it's not like you can look at Carolina and say, well, a year or two ago, they weren't a very poor team. This is a franchise that since they made the Super Bowl almost 10 years ago, they have had a really tough go at it. Okay? So I would take a look and say, when you look at all the transition from a new coach to a not very good offense to that horrible running back in D'Angelo Williams. Don't get me started on that guy. I think Cam has had the least around him, even less than Andrew Luck. And again, I get that they qualified for the worst record last year as well. But when you look at the shell of the Colts, they had a lot more to deal with. They had a lot more tools, in my opinion, than Carolina had during Cam's first year. And I think this is a conversation that we can come back to halfway through next year or towards the end of next year, because I think these guys are still going to have a slump in terms of the first-year guys.
And that's an interesting perspective, because the Colts, I think we bring in Andrew Luck into the conversation and his success and how we compare – you know, what he's doing to what RG3 is doing to what Cam did to what, you know, guys like Ponder, who's having a pretty decent year. He was, but he's kind of tailed off the last couple of weeks. But overall, he's been better than advertised. Andy Dalton, guys like that, is you know, people are starting to get hip to Luck as far as giving him some props for what he's doing. But I think people do forget that before Manning got hurt, the Colts, nobody would have said that Colts team wasn't a playoff team last year. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great point, PhD. So I want to wrap up this quick conversation. And just real quick, if you give me...
Whoa. Game changer, did you come up with your list? I mean, did you determine who is your top quarterback on this list?
Yeah, I'm not taking Cam, and I'm taking RG3.
Wow,
because I think he's the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
he gives you. I think he gives you the intangibles that Luck has. And again, I think it's so overplayed, and it's honestly it's racist how they talk about how they don't talk about Andrew Luck's athleticism, because he's not a slouch. He's no slouch. He's an NFL quarterback,
no.
Which means
you're
a great athlete to begin with. And amongst those guys, he's in the top tier. He's in that very top tier of athletic ability. So I think he doesn't get talked about because he's white. And I think it gets overplayed because RG3 is a black quarterback. I think RG3, I think he's just a notch below Luck on his ability to read defenses from the pocket. I think he's a more natural runner than Luck is. But Luck is a great athlete, and he creates with his athleticism, where I think RG3 can run. You know what I mean? Like, if you couldn't put Andrew Luck at another position on the field and get the same kind of production, that I think if you could put RG3 at receiver and he'd still be a game changing kind of player. I don't think you can do that same thing with Luck. He made plays. I think the kid's a football player. I think he understands the game, but you want him at quarterback. You still want RG3 at quarterback, but I think he could play another position. He could be a corner. He could be somewhere else on the field and not miss a beat, as far as having the necessary athletic tools to do some other things on the field. So that's why I would favor RG3. And I think he's a solid leader as well. I like them both. Again, I've always been kind of iffy on Cam. I had to shut up because last year he delivered.
That's saying something.
You know, and I'll take that. I'll eat that plate of crow because I wasn't sold on him, but he delivered. And when a cat delivers, you got to give him the props, and you got to take your L like a man. And so I've taken my L. I've taken my L.
So you're suggesting that RG3 is the best of both worlds, like R. Kelly and Jay-Z, the best of both worlds.
Not so much, because I didn't sell that well. Because R. Kelly got in trouble. Because remember, Kelly's got to have that tape came out. It was not a good look. They couldn't even tour for that.
Right.
But yes, I think he gives you the pocket passer with the ability to run. I think he still has to work out that balance, which, again, since Steve Young, we haven't seen anybody really figure out how to maintain that kind of a balance between passing it from the pocket and throwing it. But what we do know is that when cats even figure it out for a moment, for a season, they're dang near unstoppable. If you look at Mike Vick 2 years ago, it looked like he had it figured out. The cat was unstoppable. So when those guys, because we've seen pocket passers lose, And we've seen pocket passes, you know, get figured out. When a guy is on like that, I have yet to see a defense be able to really stop that guy. A defensive scheme. That guy can stop himself, which is what we see a lot with Vic. But rarely do you see a defensive scheme that slows that dude down. And so, I mean, going back to Steve Young, we haven't really seen anybody kind of really consistently be able to maintain that balance and walk that tightrope between being an amazing athlete and being an amazing runner and a pocket passer. But I think RG3 has the most potential of anybody we've seen come into the league to be able to do that. So I have RG3 1. I have Luck 2. I have Cam 3. Ponder, he's solid, but he's limited. Dalton, solid, but limited. Tannehill, I'm still not sold on him. Who else is out there? Who else?
Gabbert?
No. Heck no. So
that's how I feel about
that.
How you feel about Russell Martin, though?
Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson.
I like Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is a guy who figures out. He's a guy who I would call a winner. You know what I mean? Where I was talking about before, a guy who wins and a guy who's never lost.
I want winners.
There's a difference between the two. Exactly. There's a difference between the two. And Russell is a guy, in any situation you put him in, he figures it out. And that, to me, is a skill that equals success. If you put this dude out there, he's going to figure out how to make plays. He's going to figure out how to be successful at what you're asking him to do. And that's what I see in Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson is going to be successful. And I like him. I would say if I had to pick right after Cam, I like Russell Wilson. I like him more than Dalton. I like him more than Ponder. I like him more than Tannehill and Gabbert. So, yes, Russell will be that next dude. The only thing I think that limits him is his size. If he was 6'5", 220, he'd have been the third pick in the draft. But being 5'11", 200 pounds, it's a hard knock life if you're playing the quarterback spot.
You know, I like Tannehill, man. I like Tannehill, and I think if we look back at this class in 5 to 7 years, I think Tannehill is going to rise to a point higher than we thought he would have. Because I think he was somewhat of an afterthought when he got drafted so early. People are, well, what has this guy done? And he's shown flashes, man, that I think Tannehill might come out being the second or third best player out of these, you know, the past two classes of quarterbacks.
Yeah. And one thing I will say to listeners out there is that enjoy the quarterback play that you're seeing in the league right now, because there's a lot of good quarterbacks. There's a lot of good young quarterbacks. And if you're a team who's struggling, if you're a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs, if you're a fan of the Oakland Raiders, you know, if you're a fan of the Cleveland Browns, you know,
don't get excited about the quarterbacks coming out of college, because I think it's all fool's gold. When you talk about Barkley, Geno Smith, I don't think they're going to be able to produce at the level of some of the other guys that have come in recent years. I think we've kind of had been a bit spoiled with quarterbacks being able to come in and play right away and be successful. And I think this year may be the end of that run of guys coming in and producing right away. So don't get too happy thinking that there's another quarterback out there for your squad. You might want to wait on Johnny Football or Colin Klein or somebody like that. We'll see how those cats develop. We're going to transition right now. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. We're going to transition into some more NFL talk, but we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about this past week in the league, as we always do. We're going to start off the segment with, what do we now know? So what do we now know about the league after week 10? D-Wills is not with us. PhD, what do we now know about the league after week 10?
I'm just going to put my hands up in the air and say I don't know, because I thought we knew that Pittsburgh was the real deal. And whenever you struggle with the Chiefs, I don't care if Charlie Batch is at quarterback. I don't care if Byron Leftwich is at quarterback. When you struggle against, man, did y'all see Romeo? Romeo pretty much said, you guys fumble, you're going to the principal's office. You come in to stand next to me. I mean, Romeo was real desperate, man. So, again, when these cats take you to overtime, you know, I'm really having a hard time with that. Next, the Giants. I don't know what's going on with the Giants, man. They looked horrible against Cincinnati. Eli. Goodness. So those two teams, I just thought a few weeks ago that they were poised to make a run to really dominate the second half of the season, and they've gotten off really flat. I think we know that Chicago and the Texans are two really good football teams. We saw a really good game Sunday night, and we saw a game that was focused on defense. And those two defenses, I tell you what, I'll put them up against anybody right now, and they've got a shot to win. So I think we know that these two teams could easily, well, I won't say easily, but it's feasible to think about that they could be matching up with each other in the first weekend in February. So in my opinion, I think that's what we know after week 10.
Larry, what do you know now after week 10?
I think after week 10, I now know that there is no possible way that Norv Turner will get fired.
You don't think
so? It doesn't
so?
Matter. It doesn't matter what this team does. For some reason, he will always be their coach forever. That's the first conclusion I came to. The second conclusion is that New Orleans is a pretty tough out at home. So they are pretty dangerous. You might want to do whatever you can to make sure they don't make the playoffs. That was a pretty impressive win. I know they're at home, but that's the point. When they're at home, they're a tough out. So the rest of the teams in the NFC better strap it up and get it laced up and get it going. The Bears game, I kind of took as a meh. I mean, Phil thought, you know, hey, it's a good game. Me, I thought it was pretty boring. I know both teams got good defenses, but the offenses didn't show up. This league is full of parity this year, and I don't think there's really no favorite for the first time in, I would probably say, the last 5 or 6 years. There's no clear favorite that's, you know, destined to go to the Super Bowl. So it's good watching, but I like having one or two favorite teams to make it, you know, because it, when I go to the window, I at least want to be confident that I might get some return on my investment. So.
Larry, keeping it real. Keeping it 100. Now Norv, Larry, yeah, Norv Turner almost lost it. Norv came very, very close to losing it. He had a different vein that almost popped out his neck. What were your thoughts on Norv's rant?
Okay, when I saw that rant, it reminded me of my high school football coach, and God bless him, Mr. Andy Trice. Now, this dude is the nicest dude that you will ever, ever meet. And even when he's mad at you, he's smiling at you. I don't know how to deal with that. Norv was almost the same way in the press conference. He was like, well, what do you think? You know, would you think that is acceptable? And it's like his tone, his look, his voice was like he was scared of the reporter, but yet trying to chastise him for his team's performance, you know. It doesn't matter what that dude do. He is going to be San Diego's coach forever. He should have been fired 2 years ago. And that's all I'm going to say about Norv Turner.
what I'll say about Norv is that I'll give his rant a C+. All right? Because it was comical, but he didn't go there. He held back. You could see it. He was like, I'm not going to be one of those coaches.
Right.
He's too nice.
Yeah. I thought it was very comical because it's just like, let go, dog. Just let it go. Just let it go and do what you need to do. Say what you need to say, Norv.
Right.
Let him have it. And he just would not do it. He would not go there.
By the end of it, he wasn't mad no more. By the end of it. So, yes, that's why it's not acceptable. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
I was looking for some playoffs, you know. Playoffs.
Right. Some board material. We need some new material for the board, and Norv, he looked playoffs. Like he started out like he was gonna serve
playoffs?
Us up or something.
You kidding me?
That's it right there.
that's what they need. I mean, at least show some moxie for your team, man.
They are who we thought they were.
Exactly. Give us some Singletary. Oh,
cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
Yes. Those are the classics right there. Those are the classics. That's the pantheon right there, Coach Ranch. I thought Norm was going to give us some material. Then he just he held back. You just got to let it go, man. You just got to let your anger take over.
You play to win the game.
You know, it's kind of like the 4th of July when you got, you know, those whole big box of fireworks and you're popping them off and then suddenly, you know, oh, this one looks awesome. And you light it up and it just goes.
Yeah, we've all been
like,
there.
Did I really spend $20 for that? Oh, man.
Yeah, it's the one you've been waiting to do all night, too. It's the one, oh, yeah, we're going to hold this off to the side. Yeah.
That was a week.
Yeah. That's the finale. So I'm going to give you guys my what did I learn this week. What do I know now this week? Andy Reid, he better fire up his resume. Get your resume together, go to monster.com, get your joint updated, because it might be a wrap out there in Philly. He still doesn't get running the ball. You have one of the best running backs in the league, and you still refuse to really just commit to giving the kid the ball. I mean, and he's always been that way, and I think the folks in Philly are tired of it. And he just seems a little disinterested. And I can understand that with everything that's happened in the offseason with his son passing. Maybe he just isn't – he just can't maintain that level of focus that he needs to have to really get his team where he needs it to be. They fired the defensive coordinator. Defense still sucks. We've been talking about Mike Vick getting hit since week two. He's still getting hit. Nothing is changing. Nothing is improving. The arrow is not going up. It's going down. It was going sideways for a while. Now it's really trending down. So I think it's a wrap for the Andy Reid era in Philly. So I feel like I know that now. The other thing I know is that these GMs, these personnel guys, these team presidents are going to be coming up off a lot of dough this offseason for offensive linemen because these quarterbacks are getting murked.
Yeah.
I mean, from Alex Smith to Big Ben to Michael Vick to Jay Cutler, cats are getting killed. I mean, defensive linemen are getting after these quarterbacks, and quarterbacks are getting hit and knocked out of games. And now with the concussion rules and with the awareness that we have about the issues with concussion, if I get a concussion, man, you'd rather them get a high ankle sprain. You know what I'm saying? You'd rather them actually break an arm or something because they're going to come. You know there's a timetable for that. With a concussion, there's no timetable. So those are the two things that I learned after this week. Andy Reid's on the outs, and offensive linemen are going to get paid this offseason because this is ridiculous. You know, we're constantly talking about quarterbacks getting hit at unbelievable levels and at unbelievable rates, and they're still getting hit at unbelievable rates. So
I'll tell you what, man, we might start to see a growing market for backup quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
See what Chicago did. They brought in a guy, Jason Campbell, who probably could start for at least a third of the teams in the NFL right now. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
He can start for Jacksonville.
Yeah.
He can start for Arizona.
Yep. Keep on going.
I'm just going up top of my head. He could probably start in Buffalo.
According to Larry, he could probably start in Larry, he could start in Carolina.
He could start in Carolina.
He could start in New York. He could start.
Yeah.
He could start for the Jets.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of places he can get major run. He gets major run on a lot of teams.
So I think the Bears did some things this off season that's really starting to bear fruit. Like you said, with Cutler, he got a concussion. We don't know if he'll be back this coming week, next week. We don't know. But there's got to be some comfort there where you have a guy who can hopefully steady the ship, and the Bears have a really tough schedule coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have to throw out a Caleb Haney this year. You've got a guy who started quite a bit in his NFL career. And I think we might start to see, man, more teams go to this motto of paying a lot more for backup quarterbacks. And so now you don't have guys that are going to be good teachers to young guys. You're going to have guys that understand their role, willing to come in, but if they have to step up and play, man, they can play that position at a quality level. So we might start to see a model, man, where teams are starting to put more value in terms of dollars, because that's all it takes. That's all it takes. If you're used to playing the league minimum, veteran minimum, or $2 to $3 million for backup quarterback, you double that number and you guarantee that money, you'll get quality guys who are willing to sit behind a good quarterback that's on a good team.
Yeah, and you know, if these guys are out there listening, I'm telling you exactly what they're doing. Matt Flynn is somewhere shaking his head, agreeing with you. Colt McCoy is rubbing his hands together, getting excited. And Mark Sanchez is getting his bags packed. Because those are the kind of guys who will wind up as backups. You know what I mean? Those are the kind of guys who can get paid as backups. Young guys who may or may not have been given a shot in the case of Colt McCoy. A guy who was a backup and performed well, got a big deal, and now still a backup in Matt Flynn. And then a guy who was a starter who maybe just wore out his welcome and now going to be looking for a place to be next year in Mark Sanchez or a guy like Matt Castle. So there are going to be some backups available, I think, in the next offseason when you're talking about those four guys alone. Those are going to be some guys who are going to be available for teams to explore as backups. So, yeah, you know, David Carr has carved out a little niche for himself in New York being Eli's backup, even though Eli doesn't get hurt very often. But if you got David Carr behind him, you probably feel better about that than, you know, having a John Skelton, somebody like that, as your backup quarterback. So talking about some of the action of this past week, reflecting on some of the games, the first game we want to get into as we reflect on the week action of Week 10, the Falcons versus the Saints. Now, you hinted at this, Larry. You talked about this a little bit earlier. This is a game that I picked the Falcons to lose. You know, I'm in a weekly pool where we pick games, and I picked the Falcons to lose this one. The Saints have been on a roll. They caught them off guard, caught them at home. And the Saints are still a very good football team. Joe Vitt is back, so I think they have a little bit more direction. There's a little bit more certainty. It was hard to get a read for really what was going on with the Saints because they weren't even playing like the Saints those first couple of weeks, but I think they're starting to figure it out. And I figured at home, as you said, Larry, they're a tough out. They're a tough out in the Superdome. And I figured Atlanta would be coming in. And, again, Atlanta was 8-0, but they weren't a convincing 8-0. They weren't like the 2010 Patriots 8-0 where they was just waxing people, even the Packers from last season where they were putting up video game numbers offensively. It wasn't that kind of an 8-0. It was a, you know, we won some close games. Maybe we won some games we shouldn't have lost, and we had some good performances. We had a couple good performances thrown in there, but we won a lot of close games. And that's what Atlanta was doing. They were just going out and winning, which is all right. Ain't nothing wrong with that because you play to win the game, right, Herm? You know, you play to win. Where my man Herm at?
Hello? You play to win the game.
And so that's what they do. That's what the Falcons have done all season. But the Saints caught them. What were your thoughts on this game, PhD? Is this a turning point for the Saints? Are they going to be able to salvage some of their season and sitting at 4-5? What do you think?
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys if you guys knew what the Saints' records was. Because when I was prepping for the show, I said, wait a minute, these guys are 4-5? I thought they were like 2-7. So they're in a position, man, if they can string together some wins, they can make some noise. And I think, again, this is a team that outside of losing their heart and soul on defense in terms of their middle linebacker and one of the best offensive linemen, Nicks, in the game. Other than that, I mean, this is the same team, man. So I see them as being a team that can make some noise, primarily because their defense was never built to stop guys, to stop teams. This was a team that was built on takeaways. That's it. They were built on takeaways and having a bend but do not break philosophy on defense. So without the takeaways, they're a below average, poor defense. But what we're seeing is in the last couple of weeks, especially last week and this week nine and week ten, the defense is starting to take it away more and they're starting to make more plays. So what I saw against that Atlanta game, man, was that they just came fired up. I mean, this is one of the biggest rivalries in the NFL. If you're not from the South, if you're not familiar with the South, you know, that may be a surprise to hear. But, you take a look at the Cleveland Browns, Pittsburgh, you look at Green Bay, Chicago. This is one of the top five rivalries. I actually went to this game a couple of years ago. Actually, no, last season. And regardless of the records, man, this is a sold-out game. These two teams hate each other. So I knew that the Saints were going to give it their best against the Falcons. I didn't think they had a chance to beat the Falcons, but I knew that they were going to give it their all. And, you know, Marcus, you say, you know, Vitt had something to do with that. I don't know. I'm not completely convinced. But what I do think is that the offense is starting to click. Jimmy Graham's starting to be healthy again. And this is a team, if you look at the second half of the season, their next seven games, I can see them going 5-2. I can see them going 6-1, possibly. So I think they have a shot to be a contender here in terms of making the playoffs.
Okay. Okay. Now, Larry, I want to pull you in. I want to give you a question on the Falcons. Does their 8-1 scare you? I mean, you know, as an 8-1 team, do they scare you, the Falcons? Do you have them as a favorite to go to the Super Bowl right now? All right, PAC, you want to pick that up?
Yeah.
You have the Falcons.
A favorite to going to the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, Tony Gonzalez, but there was nothing exciting about this 8-0 team. There was nothing that I saw. I mean, you give me 10-1 odds that they were going to go undefeated. I'm still not liking those odds. It just didn't feel like they could go undefeated. In terms of making the Super Bowl, I tell you what, man, when you got Roddy White and you got Julio Jones, man, and you got the way that Matt Ryan's playing this year, you can't count them out. But the thing that really I don't like is their running game. Michael Turner looked anemic, man. What did he have, 13 carries for 15 yards? And he had 4 carries inside the 2-yard line, and his over-under on that was negative. I think he had 4 carries inside the 2-yard line for negative 6 yards. And he's on my fantasy squad. So every time I'm watching the red zone, and they show this cat in the red zone, and it's first and goal from the 1.5, I'm like, they're giving it to Turner. Give it to Turner. Okay, Turner's got it. What are you doing, man? You know, so I have a hard time with the running game, and it's so inconsistent. You see Turner played so well 2 weeks ago. He played so well last week. And then this most recent week, you know, again, 13 carries for 15 yards just isn't going to get cut it. So, to me, I don't see them as an overwhelming favorite to make the Super Bowl. There are a few teams I actually like better. I still like Green Bay better than them. I still like the 49ers better than them. And, you know, I don't have facts to back that up, but, you know, I still like those two teams better than the Falcons right now.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Okay. So I'm going to move on to LR, are you there? Okay, let's keep it rolling. So I'm gonna move on to the next game, the Cowboys versus the Eagles. I'll kick this one off. Talking about the Cowboys. Hats off to them. How about them? Hats off to them for stepping up. Getting a victory, and really I think they shut the door and nailed shut the door on the Andy Reid era in Philly. They established a bit of a running game. Romo found some consistency. Dez Bryant wasn't dropping balls all over the place. Going forward, I actually think the Cowboys are a dangerous team in the NFC East. I know that may be a wild statement to make, because they haven't shown any consistency. But I think for them, it was a turning point. I think for both of those teams, it was a turning point. I think that game is going to – what we're going to see is we're going to start to see the Cowboys start streaking. Because they've always had talent. They just needed confidence. They needed confidence and consistency. And I think it looks like they're going to start to relieve some of the pressure. Because a team like that just needs to get a couple of wins. And then they start to relieve some pressure on themselves, and they can start to play loose and be more who they are, instead of worrying about what everyone is saying about them. So I actually think that they're going to make some noise in that NFC East as the Eagles start to fall back, as Washington is still going to experience some growing pains with RG3 at the quarterback spot. They're going to be up and down and inconsistent because that's what rookie quarterbacks do. So I think it's going to come down to the Giants and the Cowboys. And we all know the Giants usually stink in November. And the Cowboys actually are usually pretty good in November. It's December when the Cowboys start to suck. So I think we're going to see the Cowboys start to pick up some steam over this month. They'll probably fall back to the pack a little bit, but I think they're going to put themselves in a position to be in the mix as the season finishes up. Now, I've said my piece on the Eagles. I want to get your perspective on what's going on with the Eagles.
What's going on in Philly, PhD?
Man, I don't know. I can't call it. Well, I think what's happened is unfortunately Michael Vick has this concussion, and it's opened the door for Andy Reid to bring in this backup quarterback. Help me out with his name. Fowles, is
Nick
it?
Foles. Nick Foles.
Foles, right. And I think in some ways this is the best thing that could happen to them is to let this guy go out here and struggle. So, you know, it's kind of like the John Elway thing a couple of years ago in Denver. You want Tebow? Fine, you got him. Okay? but I don't want to hear nothing else. Okay? So, because, again, Andy Reid knows that this is his last hurrah. He's got to go down with his dog. He's got to go down with Michael Vick. He's got to. He knows that this young kid is not. If you put him as a starter on your team long-term with Vic is back healthy, you are pretty much saying that we're giving up. We're looking towards the future. Andy Reid can't do that. For him, the future is right now. If this team fails to make the playoffs, I think it's going to be very hard for ownership to justify to bring him back.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you. I think they need to let this guy go out there and struggle a little bit just to shut up the Philly fans.
Yep.
We know how Philly fans can be. Philly fans, they love the next guy, always. Hate the guy that's in there, love the guy behind him. And this is the fans get a look at what's going on. And it also, I think, will actually let people see that. It's, you know, because I think people are blaming this whole, all of the sacks and the hits. You know, they give a lot of the blame to Vic. You know, citing that he's holding the ball too long. And that may be a part of it, but let's see how someone else does. If the young cat get back there, he's getting killed, it's the O-line. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. It's that O-line, and that O-line is piecemeal right now. And they're just not holding it together. They're not doing their job. Because you have one of the most mobile quarterbacks in the history of the game.
Right.
Back there getting murdered. It's not like you got your boy Leftwich back there who can't move. It's not like you got Scott Mitchell or Carson Palmer back there who can't move. You got the most mobile dude ever, and he's still getting killed. So, you know, and I will give hats off to Mike Vick. He's handled this very well because I'd have flipped over podium by now. I'd be on the board if I was Mike Vick. So we're going to slide on from Philly and roll on down to Houston, Texas, where the Texans took on the Chicago, where the Bears took on the Houston Texans in Soldier Field, losing the game, a battle of 2-7-1 teams. The Texans leave out of the game 8-1. The Bears leave out of the game 7-2. They also, to add injury to insult, lose their starting quarterback, Jay Cutler. For an undetermined amount of time because he has a concussion. And we don't know when those things get right. So with that said, PhD, the Texans, are they for real? I mean, we always ask this question with the Texans because we're always waiting on them to be the Texans. You know what I mean? Like, they get it going.
Yeah.
You talked about their defense. Are they for real?
Yes, they are for real. And the thing for them is, can they stay healthy? You know, they played this week without their tight end, Owen Daniels. And, you know, they've struggled to put it all together at the same time. Andre Johnson's been hurt. Schaub's been hurt in previous years. And so far, their core, their big three, their triplets, have been able to stay healthy. And so I think if they can sustain that, man, J.J. Watt is a monster. I mean, he is.
I was just going to ask you about him.
Man, I would say he's probably the closest thing that I've seen that reminds me of, and put your seatbelt on, of Reggie White.
Mm. That's not far off, in my opinion.
the closest. I mean, this dude, he gave his old teammate Gabe Carini, man, all he could handle. And Gabe's a very good offensive tackle, man. So I think when you look at that defense, man, they got some playmakers back there as well. I think this team's legitimate. They had a tough game offensively this past week, but they're playing against the Bears, man, and the Bears have been shutting out a lot of different teams. So typically teams are having a really difficult time stopping this Texas offense. To me, they're the odds-on favorite. If there is one single team in the NFL that I feel that has that I feel like can make the Super Bowl, it's them. I feel better about them making the Super Bowl than any other team in the NFL right now.
Okay. J.J. Watt, Defensive Player of the Year thus far?
No. I think what Tillman's done, man, is just incredible. And a precedent has been set with what Woodson did a couple of years ago with Green Bay, and Tillman is putting his takeaway numbers to shame right now. So I think if Tillman continues to do a fraction of what he's done the first half of the season, he's going to run away with the NFL Player of the Year.
Okay. All right. Now, my man LR, you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. Now, I want to let you jump in and give us your take on the Bears. You know, you're Chicago and you're a Bear fan. What is your take on the Bears and how they performed in this particular game? What are their prospects going forward this year?
Well, I think the Bears are going to be okay. You know, like I was saying earlier, there's a lot of parity in this league. And the teams that really worry me are the teams that have high-powered offenses. There's only really two of them in the NFC. I would consider New Orleans a high-powered offense. I would consider Green Bay a high-powered offense. If we can somehow avoid those two teams, you're going to have the type of game that we had on Monday night. They're going to be slobber knockers, as they call them. You know, 13-6, you know, 7-3, games like that. We always have a chance to win. The defense is playing excellent football right now. It's not just Charles Tillman either. You know, you got to look at dudes like Tim Jennings, Lance Briggs, even the young safeties have been playing very, very well, which is, to me, the most surprising part about the Bears this year. The prospects are looking pretty good. I don't know what we're going to do on offense. I just hope it's enough. They got to run the ball more. They got to keep Jay upright. If they can do that, they should be in the NFC Championship game this year.
Okay.
I tell you what, Charles Tillman, man, Marcus, Charles Tillman been looking like old Henry Jones from the Texas days for the Buffalo Bills, man.
No. He not him. He like Deion Sanders on Tecmo.
Yeah.
If you threw it his way, it was getting picked every time.
Tillman has had one of those seasons where, and I think both he and Watt are doing things that they're not supposed to do from their position. Like Watt is like second in the league, and or maybe he's even leading the league in passes defense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As a D lineman. And then Tillman causes four fumbles. He forces four fumbles in a game as a friggin' DB. That's just those stats. Like, you'd expect those stats to be traded. You know, Watt is forcing the fumbles and Tillman's defense in the passes.
Yeah. Right, that's how DBs roll, man. That's how DBs roll.
So says the former DB. So says the former defensive back. We're going to move into the last segment, the last piece of our NFL segment, impressive performers. That's all I want you to lead this one on. Who impressed you this week?
Well, you know, even though they were playing against my team, you know, the guy that really impressed me was Arian Foster. Because when you get up against a defense like the Chicago Bears and you can put up 100 yards rushing, have a fantastic touchdown grab, I mean, that's one of the best grabs I've ever seen from a running back. I got to get Arian some props. I've been poo-pooing him almost as bad as Cam Newton because he plays in that, you know, Denver downhill running game type scheme. I've been poo-pooing him just as much as Cam, but, you know, when you do it against the Bears, I got to give that young man some props. So he's been pretty impressive this whole season, stayed pretty healthy. So that's who impressed me last week in particular.
All right. PhD, who was your impressive performer week 10?
I'm going left field on this one. I'm going to say Danny Amendola. Say it twice.
Mm.
Danny Amendola. This guy, man, double-digit catches, over 100 yards. I mean, this cat was supposed to be out 6 to 8 weeks, man. He came back in a little bit over three. And over three. And I tell you what, if you got a PPR league in your fantasy football league, get this guy. Make a move to get him. Okay? Give up Calvin Johnson for him. Give up a top running back for him. Go get him, because if you're on a team that's going to make the playoffs, this guy is like the new Wes Welker in PPR.
All right. Yes, I have him on one of my teams. I had him on another team, and because of his injury, I had to let him go. And somebody snatched him up.
Me?
The week before, I started looking for him, and I was salty. I'm still salty about it because I wanted to cat back on my squad because he was putting up numbers before he got hurt. So my impressive performer of week 10, Adrian Peterson, 171 yards rushing, man. Ooh. Just to think, man, this dude, in this same calendar year, tore his ACL, what looked to be a devastating knee injury. And I'd say he's still not at 100%. Leading the league in rushing, he's still not at 100% yet. This kid is an amazing athlete. You know, we talk about how great and how gifted Bo Jackson was. I think Adrian is right on that level with Bo. And, you know, if Bo Jackson were playing today, he'd be Adrian Peterson. This kid is amazing. I like to just give props to him for being able to come back from what looked to be like a career-changing injury. The dude is a physical specimen. I mean, you shouldn't be able to come back from that this quickly. Play in the NFL. Again, this is not like I tore my ACL and I'm going to play rec ball on Saturdays. This is I tore my ACL and within 7 months, I'm back leading the NFL in rushing. Ridiculous. So hats off to Adrian Peterson.
Marcus, what do you think about the advice that he gave to Derrick Rose, this attack your rehab?
I'm not aware. What did he say?
He said, "Attack your rehab. Go after it. Get aggressive."
Yeah, I mean, I think nowadays, man, ACL used to be a death sentence for an athlete. If you tore your ACL in the early '90s, late '80s, it was a wrap. You know, nowadays with the advances in sports medicine, you need to attack it, get after it. And these guys are a different level of athlete to begin with. So when you talk about a D Rose, when you talk about an Adrian Peterson, these are some of the handful of that top 0.1% of athlete in the world. Heck yeah, you attack it. I think that's the best advice in the world. Don't sit around and sulk, man. Get after it. You know, you are what you are because you are what you are. You know what I mean? And you know they're where they're at because of the athletic gifts that they have. So use them. Use them to recover. Your body's still young. Make it happen. And he's living proof of that, man. He's definitely living proof of that. So just. That's an unbelievable story, an inspiring story. And, again, you know, I love to see cats come back when the odds are against them, and that's what Adrian Peterson has done. Now, we're going to move on. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Now, we're going to talk some hoops. Yes, we finna talk about the NBA the first 2 weeks. I got some scores to settle early right now, you know, and as we all said, we like to be right. So
that's right.
We're going to jump right into this segment talking about the NBA. I'm going to pass it to my man PhD first, all right? Just give me, out of these opening 2 weeks, what did you like? What did you see out there that really kind of you liked? That was a good sign. What did you like?
Well, I like the quality of basketball we're seeing early in the season. You know, I'm watching a game with a great Hubie Brown doing the game, and he throws out a stat that just resonates with me. He says, Mike, we're seeing some of the best basketball game we have seen in our league and since the 60s. The first seven games of the season, on average, we've seen the lowest level of turnovers that we've seen in the last 40 years. So I'm seeing a lot of clean basketball. I'm seeing a lot of ball movement. I'm seeing teams that have taken advantage of a full training camp, of a full off season. Let's not forget, man, the NBA was locked out last year, or strike, whatever it was. So to me, I'm seeing a lot more cleaner basketball earlier in the season, and I'm really enjoying that.
All right. LR, what did you like about these first 2 weeks?
I think the biggest thing is probably that there was relatively little Miami Heat talk. It makes my ears bleed. I don't... hold on. Let me preface this, though. You guys know me pretty well. There are certain guys that just are in my, you know, right in my wheelhouse where I'm just aiming right down the barrel and I'm looking and I'm, you know, just ready to take them down. The Miami Heat are that version of Cam Newton for me. So it's been great that the soap opera that is the L.A. Lakers have taken over. But they are second on the list, on my hit list. I'm like Uma Thurman in Kill Bill. I got like four people on my list, and I just crossed them off one by one. So the Lakers, you know, they number two, but it's been pretty funny what's been going on out there. So that's one of the things that I'm actually quite surprised about, that, you know, the Heat have been kind of obscure in the first couple weeks. So I think it's a good thing.
Larry, who's the best player in the NBA?
The best player?
Yes.
Yeah. Do I have to answer that?
Please.
Okay.
Can I please?
The best all-around player in the NBA is LeBron James. Yes.
Okay.
Would he be my first pick? The answer is no.
All right, so this adds credence. This adds credence to your bias in not being able to look past it. The whole Cam Newton, he's not in my top five. It took you that long to answer the question, who's the best player in the NBA?
Hey, you know I don't feel no questions, man. Hey, I want a dude who is okay with being in the trenches with me, man.
Right.
A lot of these divas and whatever else, you know, you go on over there and go over there and play. That's cool. So, as Iron Mike say, I want winners.
That's right.
And finally he won.
Love
good
it,
job,
man.
LeBron. You know, but yes, he is the best player in the league. Blah blah blah. I think Derrick Rose is better, but whatever.
All right.
I'm proud of it.
So PhD is enjoying the clean play. You know, he even went as far as to cite Hubie Brown, which is, you know, that's like the basketball Dalai Lama, Hubie.
Yeah.
Is, you know, at least around the RSG in the RSG circle, Hubie's the gospel. Hubie spits the gospel on a regular basis. You know, if you ain't up on that, you need to go to church and holler at Hubie. Larry is glad that there was no Heat talk. me, and it took him about 15 seconds to admit LeBron was the best player in the world, which is about 14 seconds too long.
Too long, yeah.
That was hilarious, though. That was hilarious. What did I like about the first week? I like being right. as PhD and D. Wills would tell you, I made a couple calls, you know, a couple predictions, talking about the Lakers and how they would struggle. I called that.
You did.
Talking about James Harden, and how I called them the number 3-2 guard in the league behind D. Wade and Kobe. I feel like that I'm winning that one. It's not cemented, but I feel like, you know, it's like when they call the states in the election, when we called Ohio before everybody was in, you know, the signs all point, that's a victory for the game changer. All right, so we're going to call that one. Now, Justin may protest. He may go call roll, and he may want to protest. But we're going to call the James Harden one a win for the game changer. We're just going to call that one early. All right, the Clippers, looking good. I called that. The depth, they got a 25-point score coming off the bench. You know what I'm saying? Off the bench. So I called that one. I like being right, man. I like being right. You know, we all do. But I think I like being. The Harden trade in general was very surprising. Definitely caught us off guard. Another thing that was surprising was how well some young teams like the New Orleans Hornets are playing. Very competitive, playing very well. Also, the Houston Rockets with James Harden and Jeremy Lin, that's actually working. I know Harden can play, but I still always have my reservations about Jeremy Lin. He's got a lot to prove to me, in particular. So those are some things that I found surprising. Also, one thing that was a bit surprising was how much early on OKC missed James Harden and his presence. Now, Kevin Martin is a very good player, yeah. But they're very different players. And the things that he can do are definitely complement Westbrook and Durant, but they do it in a very different way than Harden. Harden could create where Martin needs folks to create for him. And Martin, they're figuring that out, and they're doing a great job of adjusting. But that was surprising at how much Harden's absence kind of threw off their chemistry a little bit early on in OKC. They're starting to put it together. They still got some kinks to work out, but they're starting to put it together. PhD, what were some things that were surprising to you?
Well, two things for me. First of all, the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks are undefeated. Enough said on that one. Next, Minnesota. I thought they were going to, you know, going into the season, I think you, I, and Yvonne all thought that Minnesota was going to be a tough team, bidding for a mid-seed in West before Kevin Love got hurt. And even with Kevin Love out, you know, they're starting the season winning 5 of their first 7 games. So for me, those two things are the are what stick out the most.
Okay. LR, what was surprising to you?
At least from what I've seen, it looked like they might have something going on in Brooklyn. I know they got the whole, you know, rock star feel going on, but these guys are actually playing a little bit of ball to start off the season. And I'm kind of hoping they can keep it up to, you know, kind of start a little civil war in New York. It could be pretty interesting. And I think Milwaukee, too, has kind of been a surprise to start the season. You know, Milwaukee's a bunch of no-names. You haven't really heard of a lot of the guys. They're not the top-tier players. But you know how it is, you know, like the Pistons of old, you know, you get a bunch of guys together who complement each other, and they do fantastic throughout the regular season. So with Derek being out, it's a good possibility Milwaukee could be looking at winning the Central. So
I'm pretty interested to see if that's going to happen this year.
You had me at Pistons.
That's all it took, didn't it?
Yep.
Oh, wait till we get to college hoops. You're really going to like me.
Wonderful.
All right. So the next thing I want to get into while we still have time to talk the NBA, Mike D'Antoni was hired to replace Mike Brown, head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, who was fired after 5 games. Now, there have been some interesting developments over the last couple of days that have come out about this whole process around the hiring of Mike D'Antoni. Because when the news came out on Friday, by Saturday, it seemed as if Phil Jackson would be the main candidate for the head coaching vacancy with the Los Angeles Lakers. D'Antoni's name had been thrown out, but I don't think anybody really thought that he had a shot to be selected over Phil Jackson. I mean, if you have an opportunity to bring in Phil, you bring him in. And if Phil's interested, you listen and you work it out with him. The Lakers chose to go with D'Antoni. Now, over the last couple of days, it's come out that some of that, the reason that they chose D'Antoni over Phil Jackson, is in part because of some of the demands that Phil was making. They talked about him wanting some ability to make some player personnel decisions, being able to not have to travel to certain road games because of some health issues and just lifestyle issues. And the Lakers seemed like they balked at that. Now, Mitch Kupchak is coming out today saying that that's not necessarily the case. It was a basketball decision. In the end, D'Antoni's a new coach. Now, I've been out on the Lakers all season. I'm not on that at all. So I'm on reserve. I'm gonna turn my volume down, and I'm gonna let PhD talk about D'Antoni, his fit with the current configuration of the Lakers roster. Go.
It's a mess. I don't see why you let go of Mike Brown without having a backup plan ready. I just don't see it. You don't let go of Mike Brown to get D'Antoni. In some ways, in many ways, Mike Brown is more celebrated in what he's accomplished as a head coach than D'Antoni. At best, they're even. At best. You take a team to the finals with only LeBron James, you're even with D'Antoni. So, I don't like the move. I don't like the move bringing in a head coach during the season. I just don't like it. It's too much going on. Name me a situation in which a head coach has come in during the season. A head coach, not an interim coach, your coach of the future has come in during the season. I will wait.
Yeah, I got nothing for you. I don't know if LR can pull one out, but I got nothing for you.
This is just not a formula for success. It's not, especially so early on in the season. So I think it's a mess, man. I really do. I don't like to hire. Honestly, I wouldn't have liked to hire from anybody. I mean, you know, they could have brought in the second coming, and I would have had a problem with bringing in a new coach after a team has just made wholesale changes and installed a new offense. I just don't like that. I don't think they gave Mike Brown a shot, man. They gave him, you know, an abbreviated training camp last year, an abbreviated season, and they let this cat go after 4 or 5 games. You know, I just don't like it at all.
All right, so you don't like it, and I agree with you. I think, you know, if you're thinking about making a coaching change after 5 games, then you've obviously thought about this before. Because there was nothing in those five games that said that Mike Brown needed to be fired. Now, and the flaws within that team, they weren't all Mike Brown. Could Mike Brown have helped maybe put in some different systems? Possibly. But at the end of the day, no matter what Mike Brown did as a coach, Steve Nash still couldn't guard the point. Steve Blake still couldn't guard the point. And you still had no bench.
Marcus.
And that's not going to change.
Marcus, who's the best team in L.A.?
The Clippers. I can say it again. The Clippers.
Why?
The Clippers, the Clippers, the Clippers.
What?
Why are the
what?
Clippers the best team? Why are the Clippers the best team? The Clippers are the best team in L.A. because the Clippers have leadership. When you talk about CP3, you talk about they got Chauncey Billups, they got Grant Hill. These are all guys who are leaders. You got a guy like Lamar Odom. He ain't right now, but Lamar Odom has won championships. They have leadership. They have toughness. Again, Chauncey Billups, one of the toughest players in the game. Caron Butler, one of the toughest players in the game. All right, they have that kind of toughness that you need, that grittiness. They have athleticism. Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, need I say more? All right, they got assets.
Yes, you do.
They
this is the
assets.
Title track. This is the title track. give them more. Give them more.
They got perimeter scoring. CP3, get a bucket when you want to. Jamal Crawford, I'm going to start calling him the hockey player because he's keeping cats on skates. I mean, he's broken like seven ankles in the first 2 weeks of the season. Ron Artest, stand up. Rudy Gay, put your hand up. Broke them both off. All right? Grant Hill still hasn't come back to hit his stride. We still waiting on Lamar Odom to drop that Kardashian weight. All right? He's still got about 15 Kardashian pounds on him to get rid of. When he does and we get the old L.O. back, then you're really going to have some problems.
That's good living. Good living.
Exactly. The only thing, the Clippers are actually, word to Hubie Brown, the Clippers are a much better defensive team than they have ever been given credit for. So says Hubie. All right, argue with the Sage if you want to, but Hubie don't lie. So the only thing that's holding this squad back, and this is going to be my end game, all right? If this happens, this agenda goes full-blown, cold red, nuclear meltdown agenda. If, out of spite, out of anger, out of feeling slighted, Phil Jackson gives Donald Sterling a call, like, yo, they didn't want me. Y'all got a better squad. Let me see what I can do over here on the red and blue court at the Staples Center. Let me see what I can do with this red and blue. Get Clipper Darryl in the stands. All right? And they get rid of the coach that they got. That's the only thing that I think is holding this team back, this big coach, Vinny Del Negro. Don't trust him as far as I could throw him, man. What type of last name is Del Negro anyway? I'm sure that's a derogatory term in some language.
Yes, it is.
I don't know which one. But I'm sure if I spoke that language, I wouldn't be happy with that last name.
What did Ray?
Don't trust.
What did Ray say about what did Ray say about Paxton and Del Negro?
Oh man, fired him. Couldn't get along with him. Put his hands on him. Sent him on his way.
Right.
Choke that man with his own tie.
Yeah, and this is the other reason I have a problem with what's going on in L.A. right now, is that, and I think it's because the Clippers have been little brother for so long, and it's like, as an older brother, I'm the oldest of five boys, and it's like little brother just pulled up in a Corvette, and as the older brother, you've been holding it down, but it's been pretty easy, you know what I mean? He really had nobody to compete with because you older. You get to everything first. You know, you do everything first. So, really, you setting the tone. But then your little brother gets to a point where he starts to step his game up. Now you got to step your game up. But you never really had to step your game up because you always done everything first. You just did it however you wanted to do it. But now you got a little competition in the neighborhood. And little brother's driving a Porsche, a Ferrari or something. And you go out and get a big old Hummer. Why? Because you're trying to compete with your little brother. Not realizing that. That's about $100 for a gas to fill up, you know, on top of the maintenance. And so now you've made this investment trying to stunt, trying to be flashy, and it's actually not a good investment. And that's what I feel like the Lakers are doing right now. The Clippers have been little brothers so long that the Lakers have gotten all the attention in L.A. They've gotten all the headlines, and they've earned them because they've been winning, they've been successful, and they've been getting it in. They've been putting in work. But now, on the other side of town, you got a team with some big names. You got a team with some marquee talent, and they actually have a better roster. And so now you feel like you have to make a big splash to keep your name on the marquee. And because you feel like you need to make that big splash, you're making dumb moves over and over and over. Again, I was never sold on Steve Nash. Again, y'all know how I feel about Dwight Howard. Matter of fact, go to the RSG Facebook page after the show. I'm going to put up a message from my man Shaq about how he feels about Dwight Howard. How about that?
Yeah.
But they keep making bad move after bad move after bad move, trying to stay in the headlines, trying to be a tabloid team instead of trying to win championships. Again, on paper, in like 2005, this lineup would kill. In 2012, not so much. When you're talking about you got Antoine Jameson coming off your bench, ask LeBron how much Antoine Jameson can contribute at this point in his career. That's what got LeBron out of Cleveland, bringing in Antoine Jameson. All right? So beware, Laker fans. Beware. Enough said. I'm done.
Woo!
Fire.
Let the track breathe. Goodness.
Hey, I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying.
The title track. Folks who have tuned in to hear why the Clippers are better than the Lakers, you got your money worth.
Hey, hit me up on Facebook. Marcus Wiles, hit me up. If you disagree, if you're a Lakers fan and you think the Lakers got it on the Clippers, I'll debate this all day. I bet my beard on it, all right?
Well, you know, could there be an actual underlying issue here? You know, when I first heard about the Phil Jackson stuff, the first thing that I thought was Kupchak's got a thing for the bus lady. And so he was like, whatever, and doing his own thing. I mean, it is a soap opera. It is L.A. It might have some footing. I don't know. I mean, that's the first thing that came to my head when they said that, okay, we're going to talk to Phil, and then next thing you know, oh, well, we hired D'Antoni. Like, what? How does that work? So,
right.
I think Kupchak was given the big, you know, F you to everybody else, you know. I'm going to do what I want to do. And that just, you know, it ain't the right basketball move. You're right.
Yeah, and it's not a bad, like, you know, we talked about this. You know, when the Mike Brown firing came down, D. Wills and Phil T and I, we immediately got on the bad phone and chopped it up. And we talked about it. We texted about it. And in the end, we all came to the conclusion that there was no way you could improve the situation, really, other than bringing in Phil Jackson. But ultimately, even in bringing in Phil Jackson, you just wasted a year of a team with a two-year window.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You got about 2 years to really make a run at this with this squad, and you just basically threw this year away.
Yeah.
And did you guys see what Kobe was saying? You know, in most of the interviews, he was like, you know, I was hurt the last year that Phil was here. I couldn't play. You know, I really feel bad about that. I mean, I feel really bad about that. I mean, he said that like at least three or four times in one interview. It's pretty obvious that your agent superstar wants one more try with the man.
Yeah.
Why aren't you giving him the man? He knows the team inside out. He knows the city inside out. He knows what buttons to push. If you're going to make this move, it's got to be Phil. Mike D'Antoni? What? Okay. So.
Yeah, what does he want?
I don't care.
Right.
Because
what
does he
want?
He's won. To me, he's a lot like Tom Thibodeau, you know. He's a guy who can win you a lot of regular season games if the chips fall where they need to fall. But the jury's still out on whether or not he can win you a championship. Did Phoenix even get past like the second round?
Like, I don't remember.
They got to a conference final. They got to a conference final.
Twice.
Where you're wrong, Larry, is saying the jury's still out. The jury didn't deliberate it. They just came back with a verdict. No, Mike D'Antoni will not win you a championship.
Well, I don't know, though, because, you know, New York is so dysfunctional. You can't really – you got to throw New York out the window. So you got to judge
he doesn't coach
what he did in Phoenix.
He doesn't coach defense. And you can't, and we've all seen this time and time again. Name me the last team that won a championship that wasn't a top 10 defensive team.
Zero.
That you got, because you got to be able to get stopped in the fourth quarter. When you got LeBron on the other side of the court now, and the clock is winding down, it's the last 2 minutes of the game. You know he and D Wade are going to go at the basket every chance they get. What are the Lakers going to do with that? Nothing. They have no perimeter defenders who can keep up with those guys. Artest, yes, he can defend. But Artest's foot speed ain't what it used to be. And quickness gives him problems. And, yeah, you got Dwight back there. But, again, these cats on the perimeter are going to get Dwight put on many a poster this season. Dwight Howard getting dunked on posters is coming out. And they're going on sale.
And Dwight Howard also going to be on the bench in a lot of foul troubles because, I mean, you know, you're going up against dudes, like you said, can get to the basket, like CP, like Westbrook, like even Harden. Harden ain't the quickest dude in the world, but he know how to get to the hoop. So, you know, if you draw this scenario out, you know, towards the end of the season and the playoffs, you know, I don't see the Lakers – doing much if they even make the playoffs.
Question for you guys. One statement that I'm going to follow with a question. First statement, D'Antoni needs a role in L.A. with a goatee. Just get rid of the mustache. Just move on.
You don't like the Pringles guy look?
No. He do like the Pringles guy. Second thing. If Kobe Bryant wins 7 championships.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Do we say he's better than Jordan?
Yeah,
I'm going to put it out there to you guys. You know,
I'll let somebody else go first. My head might explode.
What do you think, Larry?
Okay, Pringles guy, I am, yes. 100% down with the Pringles guy. Pringles makes good chips, so he reminds me of that guy.
Yes.
Pringles makes good chips, though.
Right. I love potato chips.
Yes. I love fried potatoes. Now, Kobe winning another championship.
No.
Better
two
than
more.
Jordan.
Two more. He wins 7.
Okay, you got to tie him first.
No. We jumping by that. If Kobe wins 7, if he wins 2 more, is he better than Jordan in your book?
No. Now, if you want to know why, I'll tell you why.
Please.
Kobe is like a stem cell of Jordan. You watch all his videos.
That's true, baby.
Hey, listen. You watch all his. What's the two sheep?
He called him a test tube, baby.
What, you know, you're two sheeps, you know. You got one, and then you got Muffy and Buffy, you know. Muffy's the original, and then we made Buffy, you know. That's all Kobe is. Kobe never, ever had or will have the fortitude that Michael Jordan has. And I'll just leave it at that. That's all
that is. Game
changer. All right. I'm going to see if I can keep myself composed. No! No!
No!
No, Kobe Bryant will not be better than Michael Jordan. Simply, it doesn't matter how many championships Kobe Bryant gets. He's not a better basketball player than Michael Jordan. He's not a better defender than Michael Jordan. He's not a better shooter than Michael Jordan. He's not a better passer than Michael Jordan. The only guy who has the remote opportunity of getting into that conversation with Michael Jordan is LeBron James. That is it. I don't want to hear about Kobe Bryant being on Mike's level anymore. Kobe is a great player in his own right, but Mike was better. No matter how many championships Kobe wins, he is not a better basketball player than Michael Jordan. If you take Michael Jordan in his prime and Kobe in his prime, Mike wins.
I'll take Jordan. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. No. No, 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 no.
And can we please put this to rest? Kobe is not as good as Michael Jordan.
You see, the problem
it's
is
okay,
that Kobe fans won't let it die. Kobe fans
will
not
let
it die.
I was just about to say that. I was like, Kobe lovers, just let it go.
Let it go.
Great. He's a great player.
Put some flowers on it. Put some flowers on it. If you want to scream, take me with you before it gets put in the dirt, you can do that. You know what I'm saying?
Put a ring on it.
Get your home, put it up on your mantle, and let the Jordan-Kobe debate die. Just let it go.
Please.
Cremate it. Put a little urn. You know what I'm saying? Put it on the dresser, on the headrest, and just let it go. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Just let that one go. Please. For your own good. For your own sanity. Because you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to come up with arguments as to why Mike is not the player that Kobe is. When there's really no logical way you can put that. Not in this realm. Not in this dimension. You know, you can go someplace else and try that, you know, on a different planet. You know, they say there's a billion galaxies in the world. Maybe on one of those planets, Kobe's better than Mike.
Okay, I got
but
it.
But on Earth?
I got it.
On Earth? On Earth. With an F. On Earth, Mike's the best player. Oh, man. So that's our NBA talk for this week. We got about 10 minutes left, fellas. I want to hit onions. I want to hit the people off with some onions, and then I want to hit the people off with our Resistance Digital Dogs of the Week, and then we'll take it into the shutdown. All right? So first, let's roll into some onions.
How to plant onions.
As you would say, onion. Oh. Oh, yeah. So two gutsy picks, two gutsy predictions for the next week to prove you got some onions. All right? D-Wills. D-Wills is not here. It's like my guy is missing. You know, I'm calling plays. I'm calling plays for a cat that's not on the field.
Right. What's wrong with that?
PhD. Your onions. What you got for this week?
So for this week, I have Atlanta losing a second straight game at home against Arizona.
Ooh. Yikes. Hey, that's an onion. That is an onion. All right? So that's one. What you got for your second one?
So for my second one, I'm going with Jacksonville upsetting Houston. Again, Houston's at home. So both 8-1 teams in the league lose this week.
Wow. Garden variety right there. That's garden variety onions. Larry, what do you got for onions this week?
I think my first one, and I might be, you know, sniffing on this one a little bit, but like I said, I want to be confident going to the window, so I'm taking the under in the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game. Both of these offenses look horrible. I don't think either one of them is going to score, so I'm playing the under this week. And
you know,
I know
Baltimore
really
just scored
bold.
55, right?
Yeah. Neither one of those offenses are going
right.
to score any points. I'm predicting
they
are all right,
but they're not real.
Yeah. Single-digit points for both teams. Write it down. Okay? Now,
okay.
My second one is that somehow, some way, Notre Dame is going to end up number one in the BCS next week.
Oh, yeah.
As much as,
that's a good one.
As much as I can't understand it, they have so much backing with the ordinary folks that by some miracle, through an act of God, as they say at work, they're going to be number one in the BCS next week. And I'm going to despise every moment of it.
All right. Again, those are some high-quality make-you-cry onions. All right. I'm going to college football for my first onion as well. And I'm going to predict. You know, I've been on an L.A. kick the first couple of weeks of the NBA season, comparing the Clippers to the Lakers. Well, I think there's another power shift in L.A. that's about to happen. And that's in the realm of college football. USC is going into the Rose Bowl to face UCLA. USC has dominated this rivalry in recent years. I think I'm going to pick UCLA. Now, this isn't an upset, but I think this is a turning point for both these programs. I think UCLA under Jim Moore Jr., playoffs junior, is about to make it happen. They're about to put themselves back on the map as a football program and as a player in Southern Cali and California in general. So I'm going with UCLA over USC at home. My second onion is related to Larry's onion. They kind of like cousin onions. Oregon at home loses to Stanford, opening the door for Notre Dame to creep up another spot in the rankings and get closer to that number one ranking that Larry's talking about they will have. So those are my two onions. Upset, Oregon loses to Stanford, and then a tilting of the scales in L.A. again with UCLA beating USC. Those are my onions. Now, I'm going to hit you off with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. My man, LR. I got a couple words for you.
We need more dogs.
I was listening to that at work. That is the best interview. That's the best interview I've ever seen after a game.
That's right on the board.
Hey, I use that a lot in life, and I tell people that story about that guy and what he really means. My dog of the week. So, with that being said, I am nominating my dog of the week for the remainder of 2012. He's going to be the dog of the week for the rest of the weeks for me. And that goes to one, Charles Peanut Tillman. Dog. That's the way you play. I love him coming from a corner. I'm a homer, but you my dog for the rest of the year, man. Keep it up.
Okay. We got about a minute left. PhD, your dog of the week.
Calvin Johnson, Megatron, 12 grabs, 207 yards, and a touch. Enough said. Dog of the week, Megatron.
My dog of the week, Johnny Football. I watched all of that game. Highly impressed with the kid. Don't know how he'll do in the pros, but as a college quarterback goes, kids got moxie, kids got it. You know, Tebow had it as a college quarterback. Johnny Manziel has got it. Hats off to him, knocking off the number one team on their home turf. That
That's gangster. That's dog of the week worthy. So, as we conclude this edition of the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, we're going to sign off wishing you a great week. Make sure you stay tuned to the Dogs, to the Renegades, and make sure you check us out next Tuesday. Well, actually, not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after that, the 27th. We're going to take Thanksgiving off, but make sure you check us out the Tuesday after that. Be on the lookout. Make sure you download. Hit us up on realsportsguys.com. Check us out. Peace.